everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
Why are you emphasizing the?
I don't know, I just felt like it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is in fact an anniversary episode.
Yes.
So, because it's an anniversary episode, we're covering off one of those actually known about twin films.
Yeah.
Volcano from 1997 and Dante's Peak, also from 1997.
Yeah, the classic, I feel like. Because we did last year, I think last year our anniversary episode was Armageddon and Deep Impact, which is another. But that was 98, so they came out a year after this.
Yeah,
this is like... When we started the podcast, I think this is the one people most went, oh, is this what you're going to do?
Yeah.
When we tried to, like, describe to people what our podcast was, this is the episode that everyone was waiting for. So hopefully that means you're all going to listen to this. Yeah. We've got to make it a good one.
I'm going to start off with some questions for you first.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Have you seen both these movies before?
Yes, but... I don't know if I'd seen both of them in their entirety. These are both movies that I have watched on TV in the 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah.
So A, it's been a couple of decades. And B, as with watching movies on TV, I possibly came in slightly after the start or didn't, or missed bits and pieces of it. You know, going to the toilet and ad breaks and getting back after the ad break is finished or whatever.
Yeah.
So yes, I've definitely had seen both these movies, but probably not in their entirety, and definitely not like sitting down watch the whole movie.
How do you feel watching these movies now? Do you feel like the rating where Volcano is the lesser rated than Dante's Peak, do you feel that's fair?
I think they're very... This is going to upset one of our listeners if she still listens, because Dante's Peak is one of her favorite movies of all time. I think they're about the same, is my kind of thought. There's like two major differences, and then they're just the same. The two major differences being that Dante's Peak is very much just following this one kind of core group of people and their attempt to survive, whereas... Volcano is about coordinating a citywide effort.
Yeah.
And the other difference being Dante's Peak is about an existing volcano, fictional, but still, like, it's there and they know about it and it's dormant and becomes active, whereas in Volcano, a volcano appears.
Yeah.
Both are things that happen in real life. One probably more common than the other. But other than that, like, the same movie. And I think quality-wise, acting-wise, I think they're pretty... on par with each other as well, and they've both got big names in them. What I will say the biggest difference between watching these in the 90s / early 2000s and watching them now, for me personally, is that when I watched these first, the idea of being around a volcano and seismic activity was like a fantasy thing.
Yeah.
That was a thing that happened in movies.
Congratulations, you've moved to the Pacific Rim of Fire.
I have moved to the Pacific Rim of Fire. So I'm watching it going, oh shit, this is like reality for us.
So for those who don't know, New Zealand is part of the Pacific Ring of Fire.
Yeah.
Pacific Ring of Fire is a bunch of active volcanoes and tectonic distortions.
All around, I think it's all around one tectonic plate.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So it's why Japan looks like Japan does, why New Zealand looks like New Zealand does, and I'm pretty sure it's also involved of why Hawaii is what Hawaii is, which is a bunch of volcanic islands that grew out of the ocean.
Yeah, and that's what... So growing up in Ireland, that's what Iceland is.
Yeah.
But it was just like, that's Iceland. And all that volcanic stuff is out in the middle of the Atlantic, and it's not like where I am. Whereas where we are, you know, it's a real threat to some extent. Now, we're based in Wellington, which doesn't have... a volcano around it.
Well, we have is earthquakes.
We do have a lot of earthquakes. But I will say the number one thing, because I kept reading that part of why Dante's Peak was higher rated was because it was more accurate. And I got really annoyed by one particular part of it, which is, and you probably saw me get annoyed by this watching the film. It's towards the end of the film and they're driving away from the volcano as the pyroclastic flow is coming.
Yeah.
I know for a fact, so there is one volcanic structure in New Zealand that is a threat to us here in Wellington. And it's that a is
threat to a lot of places.
Oh yeah, I know. But like in terms, because there's a lot of volcanoes around New Zealand, and those are threats to like the immediate surrounding areas, yeah. Like in Dante's Peak. There is a super volcano, which is under the lake at Taupo.
Yeah.
If that erupts, the pyroclastic flow will reach Wellington in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And that is a distance of about 340 kilometers.
Yeah.
So that's moving at 700 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
You can't outdrive.
Yeah.
You can't drive your little shitty, you know, RV with the tires burnt off it.
Yeah.
Like, there's other things in the movie that also annoyed me being unrealistic. One of them being that they drive over some lava and just burn the tires instead of exploding.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you're not driving away from pyroclastic flow.
Yeah.
It's not happening. It's instant. If you're that close to it, it's instant. And that's how Pompeii got wiped out. That's how Herculaneum got wiped out. That's why we have, you know, in those places, there was just pockets in the ash that were people.
Yeah.
Because they just got covered in it, like, in a second.
Yeah.
They didn't have time to react. Once that came, like, people in Pompeii had time to try and get away from lava flow.
Yeah.
But once the pyroclastic flow comes down, that's it, if you're that close. And we, being 340 kilometers away from Taupo, we have 30 minutes to get off the island that we're on, which is not realistically going to happen. So if Taupo erupts, we're dead. And we have 30 minutes to know that we're dead.
It's for people who don't know the history, the last time Taupo exploded, it was documented in China.
Yeah.
During, I can't remember what dynasty it was, but they were like, oh yeah, pretty crazy. There must be like something exploded really far away. For other examples of super volcanoes, Yellowstone, which is a massive pocket of like volcanoes. If that erupted, would take out the United States.
Yeah.
Like, they're not, it's...
Yeah.
We worry, these days, we worry about human-made issues. We worry about, like, the economy, we worry about nuclear war, we worry about superbugs, like what happened to COVID, but if it had been man-made. There are things that could wipe us off the map without any ability for humans to do anything about it. One of my favorites, and that sounds really morbid when I say that out loud, is the concept of a massive solar flare.
Right.
It happened, I think it was it was really recent within history, basically it was like the early era of electricity, the early era of telecommunications. There was a minor solar flare that blew up a bunch of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we have networks, everything is networked, everything is electric. Basically nothing's manual anymore. We could get to a point in the near future where because there's a lot of areas in the world where like all of those networks are power, interconnectivity, telecommunications is the most ad hoc put together. You know, we've all seen, most people have seen photos of like what third world countries' power infrastructure looks like. You imagine that being hit by a solar flare that would cause transformers to explode because they just receive so much, you know, so much radiation. It would black out a majority of the world. There are very few things around, and I was talking to an old workmate of mine years and years and years and years and years ago now. Because he was under a clause at the time, a non-disclosure agreement at the time, while he was working on this project. And the project also revolved around other teams that they were working together, but they weren't allowed to talk about what part mm-hmm. they were doing. For context, he was an electrical engineer. What they were building were a prototype generators. And the prototype generators were designed to survive an EMP.
Yep. We in New Zealand... New Zealand is the first country in the world... I got to learn about this for work, actually, which is fun. New Zealand is the first country in the world to have developed a system and infrastructure to protect against solar flares yeah. and solar tsunamis. I think largely it's a team based out of Dunedin. I think, is it Otago University? No, that's not right. Is that Otago University down there?
I don't remember.
They're based out of Dunedin anyway. And they have developed a grid network for New Zealand. So if there is a massive solar flare, or if there's if we're affected by solar tsunamis, New Zealand will be protected when the rest of the world won't. Yeah. Which is funny, because we're also a place that, you know, has to work with all this seismic stuff. You know, we've got apps on our phones that tell us about seismic activity. I don't know if you have... Do you have GeoNet?
No, I don't have it on my phone.
You just rely on me having GeoNet?
Yeah. There's a lot of things I rely on you in this relationship, and one of them is GeoNet.
One of them is GeoNet? Yeah, so
second one is being the sole producer of this podcast, and I'm entirely... title naming, final call, like executive editor on the thumbnails, but you do all the work. I just say yay or nay.
And
voice talent.
Yeah. Well, you also knowledge, not just like vocal talent. Yeah, yeah. Like,
it's not like I'm reading a script.
You right? You bring a breadth of knowledge, because you've got like expansive knowledge of lots of weird little things. I know
lots about everything and everything about nothing.
Yeah. So we've kind of gone off track, but that is like my big difference.
I wouldn't say that bad off track.
Oh yeah,
we're talking about disaster.
Not badly off track, but to tie it back, like that was for me the number one thing I thought of watching these movies now is I live in a place where like I understand what's happening here when they're experiencing earthquakes. When there's like worries about, you know, for example, in Dante's Peak, when Pierce Brosnan's character Harry, who's a volcanologist, is debating with someone whether seismic activity is seismic or magmatic. Was that the difference between them? Whether it's tectonic or magmatic.
Yeah.
Because it's seismic either way, but whether it's being caused by tectonic plates shifting or being caused by movements of magma underground and the potential activation of this volcano. And like that's something that we do need to be aware of, you know, especially in these areas of New Zealand where there are active volcanoes or dormant volcanoes, but New Zealand has a lot of active volcanoes.
To the point where there's now a legal case about one because of there was a tourist destination which was taking tourists to an active volcano, and some of those people, unfortunately, during their trip, lost their lives, were severely injured, and now there's a big issue around the legality of what the tour company was doing. Because... Yeah, you're basically turning one of the most destructive forces on this planet into an amusement park, and it's obviously caused some massive issues because hypothetically, you have a roller coaster in a theme park or an amusement park or some sort of park, and it injures people. You know, you have liability as the park because there's no like ifs or buts about it. Like whoever was either not doing the maintenance, did the original design, whatever, there is an issue, you're a company, blah. When you have tourists going to a natural forming, a tourist attraction, and those people die because of your, maybe, possibly, because obviously this is all standing in legality, your health and safety, your policies around health and safety, who is then... responsible, because at the end of the day, we're in New Zealand. The taxpayers pay for the medical bills. It's very limited private health care. You can pay for private health care, and there are private clinics around, but it's not a normal thing. There is a horrible noise. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I can hear it. I'm hoping that it's not coming up very much on the podcast. It wasn't going when we started recording, and it sounds like it's outside of our building, someone doing some kind of construction work. I apologize if you can hear like a low hum in the background for some of this.
I think it stopped now.
Yeah, but it'll probably come back. I have GeoNet open at the moment. And there is a volcanoes tab on GeoNet, and it's tracking 12 active volcanoes in New Zealand. And I can look at them in a list view or in a map view, and then it tells me a level of unrest or level of volcanic activity from 0 to 5. 0 is there's no volcanic unrest, which 10 out of 12 are currently at. 1 is minor volcanic unrest, which we have one Ruapehu is currently at that. 2 is moderate volcanic unrest, which is where Fakari White Island is at the moment. So that's the one that erupted, was that 2023?
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago.
It was pretty recently. And then the others are 3 is minor volcanic eruption, 4 is moderate volcanic eruption, and 5 is major volcanic eruption. So Fakari White Island at the moment is one step below minor eruption.
Yeah.
Ruapehu is 2 steps below that, and then everything else is currently at 0, but they're all being actively monitored by people like the characters in these movies. Also, there's an earthquakes tab, but apparently there was an earthquake quite near us 5 hours ago at the time of recording. It was a 3.3. We didn't feel it.
That's a normal earthquake.
People about an hour and a half outside of Wellington, up around Palmy. That's where it was, and it was felt by a few people around there. One person in Wellington has marked it as felt. And I contribute, because obviously you don't have the app, to data on these things, because if I feel an earthquake, I can go in and say, hey, I felt it, and then, label it between weak shaking and extreme shaking. There is always someone who puts in extreme shaking, even though extreme shaking
is like
buildings have been destroyed. Yeah, the description is buildings have been destroyed, but people will be like, oh, it's extreme, when it's not. Extreme is what's happening in these movies.
Talking of the movies, I want to go over the cast, because you mentioned Pierce Brosnan earlier. The other main character in Dante's Peak is in fact Linda Hamilton. So I don't know how that volcano in Dante's Peak 1, because it was fighting both 007 James Bond and Sarah Connor. In Volcano, we've got Tommy Lee Jones, Hitchie, maybe?
Anne Hesh,
that's the one. Don Cheadle and Keith David. Don Cheadle and Tommy Lee Jones' relationship in that movie is fantastic.
Yeah, very fun.
Anne, who plays the seismologist, Amy, their relationship with Tommy Lee Jones' character, Mike, everyone calls him Rourke?
Yeah, Rourke. It's his last name.
Yeah. In the movie, is very weird, and I'll get into it in a bit. The beginning of Dante's Peak is such a kick in the teeth.
Yeah.
It is one of the most brutal openings to a movie that's a disaster movie that I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, like, and it's also quite realistic, because the concept is that he and his partner were both volcanologists and would go to these different volcanoes around the world. Like, he talks about it at one point. He mentions coming to New Zealand, among other, the Philippines and other places, to study volcanoes, especially ones that are active or, that have some activity, but then get away from them before there's an eruption.
That opening scene is so possible trigger warning here. He's trying to escape the volcano. He goes and picks up his partner, and they both escape in the vehicle, and the vehicle's being pummeled. And it's the most ruthless scene, because like the car's dodging like big rocks that are falling.
Yeah.
And one of the rocks goes through the cab of the vehicle, strikes her in the head, and she goes into a seizure and then dies in his arms while he's, like, screaming no and trying to drive through, like, basically hell on earth. And then he just, like, stay, and then the next scene is he's just working out while someone's trying to call him while he's on vacation.
Yeah.
And you're like, holy shit, like, this guy, so, like, if that didn't give him post-traumatic stress disorder about, like, what his job is.
Yeah.
That's the equivalent of, like, the recent Godzilla reboot franchise where Bryan Cranston's a nuclear scientist and his wife goes to investigate thing around the nuclear power plant they're in charge of in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and him having to lock the door on her, and he spends the rest of his life trying to prove that it wasn't his fault, her fault, and there was something else going on.
Yeah.
Ergo Godzilla. Well, it wasn't actually Godzilla, but you know, Godzilla related Godzillery. And because he becomes like a full-blown conspiracy theorist and like breaking into an exclusion zone and doing all those crazy stuff, where Pierce Brosnan is just like, yep, back to work as a
volcanologist. Yeah, so it reminded me of a documentary I watched called Fire of Love. I think I told you about this time.
Yep.
And it was about two volcanologists, two French scientists named Katia and Maurice Kraft.
Sorry, those are the most French names I've ever heard.
I don't know, Kraft is, it sounds, yeah, Katia, well, Katia, I don't know, Maurice definitely is a very French name. Kraft seems more Germanic to me, isn't it?
That's true.
Like
the cheese, or the beer.
Sure. But they died. They used to film volcanoes, and they died in an eruption. They were too close, and they knew they were too close. And at that point, there was no way they could get away from it.
Yeah.
But they died together. And that's immediately what I thought of, watching that opening scene. I was like, that's a real story of real people. That's something that has happened, to many people in this field. And that's a risk that people in that field of study are aware of, you know, unlike, you know, the tourists on White Island, didn't realize what they were getting themselves into, you know, people who study volcanoes know that as much as we try to predict them, they can be unpredictable.
Yeah. As much sensory equipment you can, which is basically all very lowly funded. That's the crazy thing about these kinds of events of there are very limited resources placed on keeping a track and actually studying these things. Because it's a money hole. You're literally burning money doing that.
I was double checking so that it was before this movie that they died.
Yeah.
Katia and Maurice Kraft. It was an eruption of Mount Unzen in Nagasaki in 1991. Mm. And they were really well known as people who got a lot of like, at that stage in time, a lot of the footage of volcanoes had come from them because they really were dedicated to getting photos and videos of active volcanoes and of the process. And, you know, so probably stock footage that's still used came from this couple, and they were killed in the pyroclastic flow.
Because most of the newer footage around is mainly focused on, like, Hawaii and stuff, because obviously it's a very easy to get to filming location for large American-based documentarians. And that is like slow growth of like land. Obviously, you know, people are affected. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that these places are uninhabited. It's a very real feature for them. I think we should like actually, because like as much as this conversation is fantastic,
don't get
me wrong.
Let's talk about the movies.
Let's talk about the actual movies.
Here's a comparison between these two movies. These are both films. I mean, I know they're both movies about volcano eruptions ultimately, but these weirdly are both movies about volcanologists who nobody quite believes when they say that something's happening, teaming up with a government official who is a divorcee.
Yep, single parent.
Who was trying to look after their kids in the wake of it, or like while this disaster is happening, while also mitigating the disaster and looking after their whole town / city.
It's far more obvious in Dante's Peak that there is a blossoming relationship between...
Yeah, this is why I said they join up with rather than they, you know, romantically...
I would disagree in Volcano, and I'm going to get into it now because you've brought it up.
Disagree with what?
Disagree that it is not obvious to me. Tommy Lee Jones...
Oh, I think it is, but I think it's not as overt.
Yeah. There's not a scene where they, like, go on a date and then all that...
And then they don't have their big kiss at the end. They just have a lean on a shoulder.
Yeah. There's a moment of almost... they were going to possibly sleep together, but the kids woke up and blah, 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 and that was the end of it. And it was the discovery of their water system was contaminated.
That's Dante's Peak. Yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones, like Amy the volcanologist in Volcano, there is a scene at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So obviously spoilers for these movies. There is a scene at the end of the movie which she looked visibly aroused. Mm. In the scene, Tommy Lee Jones' character saves his daughter and a boy that his daughter has been looking after after she's been to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks visibly she is like full, I want to have that man's baby's look on her face of just seeing this man be unbelievably
heroic
and
protective
and like saving children.
Yeah.
And she has a look on her face like, I hope I'm ovulating. Like this. Yeah. This.
It's so funny because in, I feel like the relationship between them is more realistic than in Dante's Peak, which is hilarious because in Dante's Peak, they, you know, are very overtly getting together.
Yeah.
But like, there's no reason for it. In Dante's Peak, they just seem to, like, suddenly know each other really well, and then they're into each other.
Whereas, it's very much like the, you know, Linda Hamilton's character is the mayor of this town. She's also, like, a cafe manager. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't understand why she's running a cafe and also the mayor.
They've won second best place to live in America for a town under a certain, like, 20,000 residents.
I think they won, like, most proud of their town or something.
No, that's what that's what she got the plaque for. Her son is a delinquent, but in, like, a harmless...
Like a Goonies way.
Yeah, harmless small town way. The daughter is very articulate for a small child.
Yeah, the daughter, by the way, the actress looks just like Linda Hamilton. Hamilton. It's crazy.
It was creepy. It was like a miniaturized version of it. And as a grown up, she looks nothing like her.
Yeah.
He just like rocks up to the town after being like pulled off vacation to go check out this thing because they've got a minor alert on it. And then he goes full British charm. He's Irish.
Excuse me, full Irish charm.
Yeah. On her.
That's a man from Drogheda.
and she's instantly swooning with this man who's paying attention to her, who's like clearly, because that's the thing about small towns, you know everybody.
Yeah.
There'll be a lot of like, being that the premises of where the father is and her mother-in-law, which is their grandmother, who lives on the mountain.
Yeah.
Which becomes very relevant later on in the story. God, I hate her. Yeah, she's so annoying. She literally puts everybody at risk.
But she has an equivalent character in Volcano.
She does. Where was I? Yeah, there'd be a lot of baggage in relation to the relationship that she had with her ex, who literally left town and no one knows where he went, including his mother.
Yeah.
Like, he had these kids with this woman and then just up and disappeared. And so I understand why, especially put in a situation like that, there's a movie trope where people in these situations always end up in a relationship together.
Mm.
And it's not because of the fact that there's actually anything that would bind them together in a relationship.
But
it's
more
along the lines of survivors.
That would make sense to me if the bonding started after the disaster became more serious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they try to, like, make out when they think everything's fine.
Yeah.
So, and they've only known each other for, like, a day. So I don't get it. I guess maybe it's just, like, instant chemistry thing, but, yeah, like, yeah. It's not earned as yeah. much as... I mean, by the time they kiss, they actually kiss. That's kind of earned. But in Volcano, it's very much these are both... You can tell, like, they just develop the characters separately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you see these are both people who are very passionate about what they do, very interested in saving people, saving the city, and like, very much people who go, like, here's a problem, I'm going to solve it. Yeah, yeah. Even if they differ on how they want to do that. And also, when they are working together, they rely on each other's strengths.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, hey, you're really good at this thing, can you do that? Oh, you're really good at this thing, I think you should handle that. And then to a point where then, like, when she doesn't have a job in that situation, he's like, actually, there is one other thing you could do, like, and he trusts her to go find his daughter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's very much like, these are both people who work well under pressure, who are willing to sacrifice themselves to help others. You know, as evidenced by the fact that they both go in to try and help the homeless guy, even though yeah. it's putting them in the line of literal fire yeah, and yeah. lava. Twice in the movie, he gets cornered between lava flow, a fire, and a vehicle.
Yeah.
I was like, why? How does he keep doing this to himself? But they're both the person who's going to rush in and do this thing, even though it may be, you know, it's they don't put their own lives first. And they see that in each other, and respect that in each other. And also, like, and Tommy Lee Jones does it not just with her, but also then with the doctor. You know, he runs up to her first when she's trying to help the firefighters, like, oh, you gotta get out of here. And she says, I'm a doctor, he needs this. And he's like, okay, what can I do?
Yeah.
And, like, he immediately is like, oh, okay, you're a professional, you know what you're doing, I respect you, tell me how I can help.
It's actually surprising, because this movie was made in 97.
Yeah.
Volcano has probably the least problematic relationship between a man and women who are experts in their field that I have seen in most modern movies.
Yeah, absolutely. He just instantly respects, like, you're the person who knows about this thing.
Yeah.
I trust you.
Yeah.
And even, like, the beginning of Volcano, when she's saying, you know, this maybe it's going to be a volcano or whatever, and he's like, okay, that sounds extreme, but he's like, well, here's what we need to do. We need to shut down the subways, need to do this, this. And then, you know, the equivalent of the grandma for me in Volcano is the guy who's like, we're not shutting the subways.
Yeah.
And then because of him, all these people end up in a subway that's overheating and lava is coming in.
I just realized.
What?
He also dies because his legs get melted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So again, spoilers. Obviously.
And both of them are realize that they've caused
this and sacrifice themselves.
Yeah.
So the grandmother in Dante's Peak, they try and escape over when her house gets. So the kids drive off. The kids drive off to go save the grandma.
Not to stay with the grandma. They go to save the grandma because they've been calling the grandma and she's not picking up. And then the town's being evacuated.
Yeah.
And the kids, rather than either wait for the mother or evacuate, leave her a note and say, we're going to go get grandma. Yeah. And they drive themselves up the mountain because they want to rescue their grandma.
Yeah.
And then Linda Hamilton and Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I remember his name is Harry. I've forgotten what her name is in the movie. drive up after the kids and the road gets destroyed behind them. So they're all trapped up there and then lava is coming down.
So yeah, they escape via a lake with a boat. And the boat starts melting because of the acidity of the lake, and the prop melts off, so she ends up jumping out and pushing the boat, and it melts her legs.
And she saves the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah.
So she jumps from a vehicle into something that is melting her legs because of the volcanic eruption, and saves all the people on that vehicle, and then dies. And in Volcano, the subway guy, who was the reason that all these people were on the subway, gets everyone off the subway car, and there's one person left who's the driver. And they say to him, you know, you can't save him. If you put him down and jump, you can jump over the lava. And instead, he holds on to him, jumps into the lava, and then chucks him at them so that he saves him, melts his own legs, and then melts his whole body and dies.
Yeah, he goes out like Terminator 2.
Yeah, even the thumbs up.
Yeah, yeah. Here's, here's the okay, so this also may be triggering to some people. That scene in reality would have been a hell of a lot worse than what they played on TV. So, quick science lesson for you folks. What is lava made out of? It's made out of molten rock.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think's more dense than the human body? That's right, it's rocks.
Yeah.
Rocks so are more just, dense.
Your melted flesh would melt would float on top of it. You'd go on fire, first of all.
Yes, so you know what the Lindenfrost effect is?
I probably do, but it's
so
not
if
point
you put, if you have a super hot pan and you draw water into it,
oh yeah,
what happens is the outside, the bottom layer, that's the water, so you've got a droplet of water, the water that is touching the pan turns to steam.
Yeah.
And because of that, it floats around on the pan
until
it completely turns to steam and disappears.
Yeah.
That's what would have happened to him.
Yeah.
He would have floated on top of the lava, boiling and on fire until he either became the same density as the lava or was completely consumed by it.
Yeah.
And that scene would have, if they'd done it scientifically, been way more horrific.
Yeah. And the grandma, they don't show her burns till they've healed a little bit. They don't show it immediately.
Yeah. You thought it was cut because you were like,
because I had remembered seeing
her like
her
legs.
Up legs. Yeah. and he was like, look at her legs, and then they don't show it, and I was like, oh, did they cut that part? But then it's like a scene later or whatever, or like a few moments later. But yeah, she's got horribly acid burned legs, and then she dies from it.
The only issue I actually have with the medical, I have some issues with the medical dialogue with the Dr. Jane
in Volcano.
In Volcano.
Yep.
And also the her insect diagnosis that Kelly, Tommy Lee Jones' daughter's burn on her leg. She gets like splashed by the llama and her pants catch fire.
Yeah.
Is a second degree burn.
Mm-hmm.
I know what a second degree burn looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You never see it. She just has like a bit of pink on her leg, which would be a first degree burn.
Yeah.
It did bug me. And also, how does she get all the abrasions on her face? It's like,
yeah, she goes around with like cuts all over her face.
And she's just covered in blood for like a large chunk because she's like helping out the doctor. And it's like, wouldn't you clean that off? Because then the next scene, she's just like in a cafe looking after children, eating chips and burgers like nothing's happened. But she's still covered in, like, fresh wounds.
Yeah, I think that's just to give it the disaster movie look.
But she could have just been covered in, like, a bandage.
Everyone's
got to
be grimy. And Well, no, I mean, I think the idea is that's minor and there's so many other people. Like, they to the point that outside the hospital, they have people.
A triage unit.
So it's not just in the hospital. It's, like, the whole outside of the hospital is a triage unit. So, like, you're going to treat the people with more severe injuries. You're not going to be wrapping the head of a kid who has a cut on their head.
How did she get it?
I don't know.
Because she gets a burn on her leg, and the next minute she's covered in blood because she like applies a blanket to a firefighter's leg.
Yeah.
And then she's got like a massive abrasion on her face, and I don't remember seeing it ever happen to her.
Maybe it's a deleted scene of the car crashing or something.
Maybe. Because there is no scene of her getting there. It's just her being treated temporarily on the phone to one of the other employees who works for the whatever organization within the city board. I don't know. Because they're not really civil defense because they're like looking after so much stuff. They are really hardwired into a lot of things. And I would find if there was a civil defense in most towns,
emergency management.
Yeah.
Group or something. I don't remember.
Like, they are really well funded. They are really well put together and really well trained. And, like, there was a disaster recently in Auckland, New Zealand, where the mayor had to sign off on stuff until things were going away and refused to come to work. Like, they are just bypassing the bureaucracy to get their job done, and I love it.
Yeah.
It's probably unrealistic.
I do like that the guy who's always trying to get a hold of him never actually talks to him. Also, another, like, weird similarity between the two movies is that, like, our lead male, who in one is the government official and in the other is the volcanologist, is supposed to be on holiday at the beginning of this. And it's like, and a running dialogue of like, aren't you supposed to be on holiday or aren't you supposed to be on vacation? And one and the other is like, you should go on vacation. And then this all happens. And then at the end of it, they're like, I'm on vacation. You know, and I can, and also, but like, I think it attests to both their characters in that they're very, they care a lot about the thing that they're doing. And I guess, and I think the backstory with Harry, Pierce Brosnan's character, I know you were saying, like, would that not make you not want to be around volcanoes ever again? But I think what it's done for him is, and what that was showing us, is that he
is very gut trigger happy when it comes to trying to stop the same thing.
Yeah, he really is wanting to not put people in harm's way and to get people out as early as possible. And then
because of that, they have this situation where, like, well, if you're wrong, you've destroyed this town.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the town's going to get destroyed. This is a disaster movie, folks. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's my favorite of, like, people in a movie don't realize they're in a movie.
Oh, yeah. My favorite moment of that in Volcano, or no, not Volcano, in Dante's Peak, is because I had taken notes, and I think I had just said, because the mayor is giving... Yeah, I was like, first of all, I said, everyone is so proud of their little soon-to-be-destroyed volcano town.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I wrote was, oh no, she's calling the town safe in a speech 5 minutes into a disaster movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're like, that's, you don't do that. She was like, our town is so safe. And then it cuts to this couple in a hot springs. And I was like, this couple in a hot springs, at a volcano, at the exact moment that their mayor is talking about how safe the town is, they're going to die. I was like, I don't know how they're going to die, but they're going to die. There's no reason to cut from the mayor being like, this town is so safe, to a couple making out in a hot spring on a volcano,
well, they,
unless they're going to boil to death.
Which, spoilers, they do.
Yeah.
Just realized something. Because there's a little thing I want to talk about Anne Heche, for a moment.
Yeah.
Shortly. Talking of couples that get melted, she's in 6 Days, Seven Nights.
Which I haven't seen.
You've
talked about that on the podcast
before. Yeah. I just keep trying to remember to make you watch it.
Okay.
She had a relationship for a long time with Ellen DeGeneres.
Oh, right.
3 years she was together, to the point where I think The Simpsons made fun of it at some point. Her death is really tragic. She died at the age of 53 after 3 drug-related DUI and traffic accidents.
Right.
And the third one killed her.
Yeah.
And... because the reason I didn't know this, I didn't know that's how she died until we were watching the movie, because I was trying to work out the very controversial but sort of ongoing issue of the differences between ages in relationships,
right,
in relationships in movies.
Yeah, yeah, and her and Tommy Lee Jones don't seem like they're the same age at all.
Yeah, and I was trying to work out how old they were, but obviously when I found out she had died in a car crash, what year was it? I've got it here. Yeah, 22.
Oh, pretty recently.
Yeah, she was 53. But yeah, apparently she'd had an issue with fentanyl and cocaine in her system. At the time of her crash.
Yep.
She hit a house, and it was pretty nasty, which is very sad. But that's one of those things that sort of happened when I was trying to look up like the age difference between the two of them, because Tommy Lee Jones is what?
In his late 70s.
Yeah, 78. So he was born in 1946.
Right.
And she was born, when did I just say? It was way earlier than that. Yeah, she's a 69 baby.
Yeah. So 23 years.
Yeah, yeah, there's a bit of an age gap there.
Yeah, I feel like Pierce Brosnan and Linda Hamilton are more age appropriate.
Yeah.
They're about the same, I think.
Pierce, 53. And Linda Hamilton was 56. So there's only a 3-year difference between the two of them. So that's a little bit
that's
more...
That's less than our age gap.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it definitely was more of an age gap between... Yeah,
but she
Tommy
definitely,
Jones.
Like, is so into him. It is. From, like, and I'm not,
it,
like...
But it is more subtle, and it is... And also, I think, because the film takes place over less than a 24-hour period, you're not going to develop a whole relationship in that time or whatever. But you can see the foundations of one.
Yeah.
Like, you can imagine these people are probably going to end up together.
Yeah, it would be a very short amount of time until both of them are very, very highly complicated. And they would be probably the most busy people you know, going forward. Because unlike Dante's Peak, where this town is destroyed and most people get away, this is L.A.
Yeah.
Like... It's, like, that's, people aren't moving.
I will say, I did get a little, upset. But just thinking about the realness of the situation in Volcano, not the volcano part, or this, even necessarily the seismic activity, but there is a moment in it where it's just people. It's just people, ordinary people in LA standing outside their houses while their houses are burning and being like, that's my home, that's everything I own. And I was like, that is so real because that is
happening in California so regularly. I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on here because I when that was happening, when the last round of Californian wildfires were happening, they were interviewing people on TV, and I was watching these interviews with the news with these people. So there was a group of people who were told to evacuate from the area that the fire was raging through. They refused, they got together in their neighbours, and they wetted down their entire property.
Yeah.
And their street was saved. Everybody else's was destroyed. Theirs was fine. Recently, he had mentioned that they all had, in California, in that area, they had fire insurance. So if your house burns down, you pay your premium, you pay your monthly payments, and the insurance company would cover the damages.
Yeah.
Recently, multiple people on the street had complained because the insurance companies they were with was trying to remove their fire insurance.
Yeah.
Claiming that they'd done surveys via drone of their area and determined that their individual properties were prone to fire and it was the householder's fault.
Yep.
What had actually happened was the city council had removed funding out of one of the fire prevention systems they'd put in place, which was cutting back the underbrush, which is what causes fire to go through and spread so rapidly. And you have this, it's not a conspiracy when it's kind of a fact, but if you have, like, because the guy they were interviewing was like, I work from home, my partner works from home. We never saw drones fly over our property to do a, like, because a full surveillance of switch of a drone is not like, gone, like, oh no. If you're talking about, oh, there's brush on your property, therefore you are violating our terms and conditions with you, like, you're not stacking firewood, you're not putting, like, rusty barrels filled with oily rags lining your property like some sort of, like, Acme villain's lair. Like, this is corporate greed screwing people, because people have been like, oh, well, whatever, you know. It reminds me very much of the incident with the healthcare CEO, because there's millions of dollars worth of million-dollar houses that were destroyed during this fire in a very, very rich area, because obviously the California, you know, the hills are very beautiful, you know, you get a nice, very nice, beautiful view. I'm not, you know, shocked to find that people want to move and live in these houses up there in these nice, really nice neighborhoods. But when you have too many pieces of the puzzle go together of, like, the council, the body council stops funding a fire prevention, you have a $1 billion insurance company remove people's fire insurance, and then you have a massive fire, and, you know, everyone's blaming everybody else. The fact that at that point in time, the current sitting president was threatening both the next door neighbors of the country of both Mexico and Canada
mm-hmm.
for being basically sponges and worthless and everything else, and thousands of firefighters from both those countries came to help,
yep.
kind of shows that above politics, people are good. And yep. it is politicians making people more divided and trying to overstimulate small, tiny disagreements we have mm-hmm. in society to blow them way out of proportion.
I think that's what Volcano is about.
You reckon?
I think Volcano, the movie, because Dante's Peak is very much, oh, let's evacuate this town, and that was just this family thing.
Yeah.
Volcano is, and I mean, they do a weird thing with these cops and this guy who's complaining that didn't really need to be the way it was, but the ultimate goal of it is they then work together to save the city. But they have, you know, the volcanologist or seismologist. Is she a seismologist or volcanologist? Whichever she is.
Yeah, yeah.
They have her. They have Tommy Lee Jones and his emergency management geologist. Team. She's a geologist.
And seismologist.
Okay.
She's both.
But not volcanologist.
No.
So they have Tommy Lee Jones and his emergency management team. They have all the firefighters showing up. They have the doctors triaging at the thing, and also like regular people you see, obviously his daughter being brought in to be like, hey, can you look after these kids? But also like the kids are being looked after in a mall and being given free food from a food court. So like the people working in the mall are working to look after people. The people in the hospital are working to look after people. People are coming in to help with the hospital. You know, you have the cops and the firefighters helping Tommy Lee Jones to push over. Was it a bus that he pushes over? You know, we have them people rescuing homeless people. You know, the dog that people are cheering to get the dog out of the house. Like, it's very much
communities coming together.
Yeah, it's this idea that when this disaster happens, it's not discriminating.
Yeah.
You know, it's not deciding, I'm going to hit a black neighborhood, I'm going to hit a white neighborhood, I'm going to, you know, go for lower class, upper class. It's the same with the fires that, there's Hollywood superstars whose homes got burned down, and there's regular people.
And also people that came out and said their homes were burnt down and then they weren't, which was also super friggin' weird.
That's just weird. But the point of the matter is this, you know, in Volcano, this disaster is not picking particular people to pick on. And, you know, even people who start off like, this isn't, you know, why can't you come help my people first, then go, actually, we need to work together to do this.
Yeah.
And it's very much like all these different people. And, you know, Keith David plays a cop in it who just gets on board and is we're going to look after this. And it's all these different kind of emergency departments, but then also just regular people being like, something needs to be done. This man has a plan. Let's follow this plan. Let's work together. You know, and you have the great scene where they've, you know, and I know it's not the ultimate scene because then there's a larger eruption happens, but where they have used the cinder blocks to block off a part of the lava flow, and they're trying to dam it, and they need to drop water on it, and they have all these fire trucks lined up, and they're like, well, we got to do it at the right moment or it's gonna, you know,
it's not gonna work.
And then you have this heroic moment where all these helicopters come in and
most of them are like news helicopters as well,
and it's very cool. And it's and you know, with the news, there's a reporter who's on the phone, and then they take his phone to be like, we need to call these people and do this. It's that whole movie is very much about how a community can come together when there's a disaster. And yes, there's still going to be losses, but we can work together to minimize them. And I think that's fantastic. Whereas, you know, in Dante's Peak, they have an evacuation plan and they bring people together, and then people, and then there's a quake and people panic and they all run, but they do manage to all get evacuated, and we just don't really see that happening. We see people panicking, and we see people like driving into the river to get away and floating downstream and stuff, and that's not great. But then it just like doesn't focus on that anymore, and then later on it cuts to the team, the volcanologist team, be like, wow, everyone's evacuated, we better go now too. And it's like, wait, how did everyone get evacuated?
Yeah, yeah.
They didn't even take the plans when they were told to take your evac plan.
It's what you said earlier really sparked me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I saw it in your eyes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When you said about natural disasters not targeting people.
Yeah.
What can happen, and I'm not saying this is true, this is a little bit of a tinfoil moment.
Oh yeah, no, I feel like I know what you're going to say.
What is it then?
That the relief for natural disasters can be
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the things put in place for certain areas, and it feel that, you know, it does feel targeted for those who don't understand what I'm talking about. You should probably look into what was done for relief during Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, I thought that was what you were going to talk about.
We've also seen just recently with, you know, the resurgence of climate change denial, a country then who denies climate change being hit with massive out of season, once in 100 year, as people call them, floods, mm-hmm. where they have no civil service designed. And I watched a time lapse of these rivers explode.
Yeah.
And people were standing next to them, watching them rise, to the point where then the entire community was completely surrounded. And it was silent because none of them have any civil defense emergency sirens. No yeah. one knew what was happening. And that's why so many people died.
So awful.
And this is going to be the reality going into the 22nd century for mm-hmm. humanity, is because we... Regardless if you argue that we have done damage, we haven't done damage, the climate of the planet is changing. It's been changing since it existed.
Yeah.
The cradle of humanity came out of the ending of the Ice Age. There's a possibility we survived. We were in the Ice Age for many years. There is ongoing research into how quickly the Ice Age ended, how quickly it started. Like, all of this.
Yeah.
Like, there is... Because the time travel hasn't been invented yet. Back to one of our
other episodes. That's the name of one of our other episodes.
Yeah, yeah. we will never exactly know.
It also had Sarah Connor.
Yeah, yeah. How extensive humanity was as a developed species at the end of the Ice Age.
Yeah.
Because there is evidence, especially with what they're digging up these days, where it doesn't fit into the Clovis first, you know, the Bering Land Bridge model, like a lot of things are changing very slowly, unfortunately, because there are mysteries still unsolved. Newgrange is one of my perfect examples of it was there, it was used, it was worked in, there was technology being used here that doesn't make sense in the timeline, and it existed before the pyramids.
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't, I mean... The way it's set up makes sense. Like, yeah. We know how it was built.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's things like, how did they measure...
transport...
Well, yeah, how did they transport things? But then also, like, how did they know... You know, how did they measure and plan to make this passage tomb where the light on a very particular day...
Yeah.
Comes down the tunnel and lights up the passage? That is a
very advanced civilization, because if you have... The ability, because, you know, there's this argument of hunter-gatherers.
Yeah.
Then they've changed the definition of that. So I've gone really off tangent here, folks. My brain all works right. Like a train station. I just jump between platform and platform. And the trains are always running. My train of thought, that is. You have to have people that are skilled. You have to have people, like, you know, how society but works, like, is we all have our individual job.
Around the same time, ancient Egypt were, like... discovering the earth was round.
Yeah.
Because they built structures at two different points a certain distance apart, and then they were able to measure that at the same time.
Circumference, yeah.
The sun was in a different, like, in a pointing in a different direction in these two different places or whatever, you know, and like
they were pretty close to the perfect circumference of the earth.
Yeah.
And we didn't get an exact number until we had satellites.
Yeah. But back then they knew. They could work it out from... Yeah, that's crazy.
And do you know what I honestly think it comes down to? Do you know what I honestly think it comes down to?
What?
Racism.
Oh, as in people thinking people couldn't do that?
Because they're white. Yeah,
absolutely.
Because it's always, if you watch any of those conspiracy alien shows...
I don't know, I mean, you're saying it about Ireland, so... You're like, how could the people in Newgrange have done this?
Well,
the Turkish people in Newgrange.
No, I'm not saying how they... Well, the fact that they would have had to have such a huge infrastructure to transport the amount of courts that they did.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. There's
an entire mining operation, a transport operation.
Yeah, like, but it's not like... It's not like a, whoa, they could never possibly have done
this. I'm not claiming it was aliens. That's the issue that I have with all those bloody shows is like... Oh, brown people made this. Must have been aliens, folks. Yeah. There's no way these brown people could have figured that out. It's all like, but white people. Oh no! It was this guy. He was real cool. He invented this thing, but he was white. And then it's like, oh no, brown people.
Yeah.
Brown people did this cool thing that we can't figure out. So therefore, aliens did it.
Okay, I had two things I wanted to talk about based on what you were talking about.
Go on then.
We're gonna have an infinite loop here. One, and. I've probably said this on the podcast before, and I definitely have said it to you many times, and I'm going to reference a book with the title of what I want to say, which is that everything is tuberculosis. when you were talking about, you know, targeted relief and prevention in wealthier places being different to prevention in other places... that is absolutely currently the truth of tuberculosis.
100%.
Which is, you know, for a lot of the Western world, seen as a thing of the past. Yeah, that's something like from the Victorian era or whatever.
Smallpox.
And at the same time, it is a disease that is preventable and curable.
Correct.
Easily preventable, easily curable. And consistently... Every year, except there were 2 years during COVID where COVID surpassed it. Every other year, it has been the number one cause of death in the world.
Yep.
Millions of people are dying of tuberculosis every year. And it's because, as John Green puts it in his book, Everything is Tuberculosis, the cure is where the disease is not, and the disease is where the cure is not.
Yep.
And it's very much a case of greed. A lot of the reason that tuberculosis is not being cured in these places where it is prevalent is because of pharmaceutical companies who keep extending their trademark on medication that can cure it.
Yep.
And keeping it at a level of cost that makes it prohibitive. So governments and health departments in these countries can't afford to get enough of the medication in their country to look after people.
Yeah.
And the book, Everything is Tuberculosis, talks about one particular case where, you know, this kid had TB and it's so stigmatized in the country from Sierra Leone that, like, he went to hospital for it, but his father didn't want the family to be shunned for having a tuberculosis child, so he took him away from the hospital before, when he had only done part of the drug run, which meant that he developed a drug-resistant form of tuberculosis.
Yeah.
So then when he went to go back for treatment, the treatment didn't work because he had a drug-resistant strain, and they don't have the ability to test for that in these countries. It's very easy to test for it in where we are.
Yeah.
You could tell instantly exactly what drugs you're resistant to. But then in doing that, they made it an even more, like a multi-drug resistant version. So he kept, you know, going for treatment. And they fought to have this kid given what any person who has tuberculosis in the Western world would get, which is a personalized treatment regime.
Right.
Rather than, here's what we give everyone. Hopefully it works. Throw some mud at the wall, see if it sticks. And it worked. And he is now, like, he went back to school and he's thriving. He's got a YouTube channel. I can't remember the name of it, but his name is Henry and he lives in Sierra Leone. So go look him up. But, like, it's very much, you know, like that with disaster relief, that in places where the population is poor or the government is poor, the disaster relief isn't happening.
Yeah.
So these disasters happen and so many people lose their lives.
It's also human, like as you said, it's greed and human corruption.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, there are multiple cases in where countries get given disaster relief from other governments.
Yeah.
And none of the people who are affected get that money.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I wanted to talk about was just emergency preparedness. That watching volcano in particular, I was like, oh, maybe we need to re-go over what we have and for in our emergency kit, and should I have a proper grab bag? I probably should. But then I also was thinking, like, we are pretty prepared.
Yeah.
Because when you watch this movie, like, the, you know, even though it is set in LA, where there are earthquakes, like, people aren't prepared for the possibility of volcanic unrest, and they don't have a system, and then they're trying, because they have this emergency management department who are trying to, like, do all these things, and they have their fingers in all the pies. And then in Dante's Peak, they're living on a volcano, but they don't, the people, like, they have to hold a town meeting to be like, let's go over our evac plan, or she's, you know, the mayor is going, we should probably dig up the evac plan. Everyone should know that.
Yeah.
And, like, as much as I'm saying, you know, we have some stuff, and we don't have a full everything we should have.
Yeah.
I know what the evac plan is.
Mm.
I know what happens if there's a quake here. I know what happens if there's a tsunami while we're in this building. I know what the evac plan is for both of those things while I'm at work.
Yeah.
I know what my personal plans would be if those things happen while I'm just out and about.
Yeah.
You know, I think overall, there's, you know, as a city and as a country, we do take emergency preparedness seriously.
Yeah.
And I am very grateful for that, because obviously these things are a real threat here.
Yeah.
You know, we could have a tsunami. We could have an earthquake. Yeah, well, we could have an earthquake. We had an earthquake this morning and I slept through it. We have earthquakes all the time.
Fun little fact for you. We had a reasonably decent earthquake within the last 12 months here.
Yeah.
And all I did was wake up, shield Lisa with my body, and then the earthquake stopped. And I was like, okay, and went back to sleep.
Yeah, I was like, great, thanks. Yeah. I feel so safe. yeah, it's interesting, because it's strange to me to think, but they must have plans. But also, like, Los Angeles is so massive and has so many people.
Oh, there are so many people.
But I would hope that people living in LA and in other places where volcanoes are a risk, earthquakes are a risk, or other natural disasters. Mm. Just think about it. Just make sure you know what your evacuation plan is if you need to evacuate. Or you, for us, and where we currently are, we are out of the tsunami evac zone.
Yeah.
So we need to be aware of what we need to have in our apartment in case everything goes down.
Yeah.
If there's a big quake and a tsunami and we are stuck in our apartment, you know, what we need, is it for 3 days? You need to have enough stuff, enough food, enough things like canned or, you know, food that doesn't go off, one square meal bars, etc. In your apartment, and water, because the water might not work. And that's something that we don't actually have ready, which we should, which is big bottles of water stored away. And enough for Strider. We've got to have enough to look after him. And we do keep some of it. We try to keep some canned goods and some, like, granola bars and things. Yeah. And also we have a little solar powered radio that can also be hand cranked.
Yeah.
And it's got a torch on it, you know. And it's got a charging on it so we can charge phones.
Yeah.
You know, it's making sure that if you live somewhere, and this is becoming everywhere at this point because of climate change, if you live somewhere where a natural disaster could happen or is likely to happen, just think about what you would need to have on you to survive that.
Yeah, we're not suggesting you become full, like, doom preppers.
No, no.
Have, like, 50 years worth of food in your basement. Like, I've seen videos of people who do this, like, insane prepping of, like,
oh, yeah,
come with me, we'll, like, we'll look through our stores. Here's, like, 9,000 kgs of oats that I've got here vacuum sealed that'll last 15 years. And you're like, all right, mate, like...
Yeah, it's just having a way to listen to broadcasts or something so that you know what's going on in the world. So that you can receive messages if they're saying, hey, everyone needs to get to this place. Or, hey, you know, contact this way if you need supplies or, you know, this is what's happening. Because Wellington, a big risk with Wellington with a major earthquake is that we're going to just be cut off from the rest of New Zealand.
Yeah.
Because the major highway in and out of Wellington is along a coast road that could easily
collapse. With Transmission Gully open, it's a little bit easier.
But you still, to get the Transmission Gully, you still got to go up that highway. You can get it, you could go across to Makara Beach and try to get somewhere else that way, but there basically is one way in and out of Wellington, essentially. And if that road collapses, like in Volcano or in Dante's Peak when the landslides happen, we're stuck here. We gotta wait for the emergency relief to come down, so we gotta have enough supplies to last us while that's happening. Yeah.
On a,
just a fun thing to think about.
Yeah. Moving on. Do you want to get into some trivia and some stuff? Because I feel like we've rambled on enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thoroughly enjoy this episode so far, and I hope you at home have as well, while Lisa looks up her trivia.
Yeah.
Follow us on social media, and you can find our social media by going to ittakes2.co.nz.
Mm-hmm.
And you can join our Discord, you can join our mailing list, you can follow us on Blue Sky. Mm.
He's learning where we are.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Instagram.
I don't use Tumblr, don't have Instagram.
You don't use Blue Sky.
Don't use Blue Sky. I tried to stay off social media for blood pressure reasons.
Except Reddit.
It is a social media platform, really. But it's just, I just look at silly things.
I don't have a lot of trivia about Volcano, actually, but the things I have taken down are one of the cameramen in Volcano, his name is Mike Benson, actually got stuck inside the crater of the Kilauea volcano for 2 days in real life.
Jeez.
While he was shooting a different movie in 1992, which is just crazy that he got actually stuck in a volcano crater. Yeah. And then went on to make or to like be the cameraman on Volcano. There are now the IMDb trivia listed the names of all these people, which I am not going to do, but there are 45 real life reporters and journalists who play themselves in Volcano.
Oh, wow,
which I thought was very cool. Rachel, who is another geologist, seismologist in the movie, who dies quite early on in the movie.
Yeah.
Mentions an incident in Mexico, and what she's referring to is there was a volcano that emerged. Now, it did take a couple of months to emerge in the 1940s, that is about half a kilometer high, and it just like suddenly came up. Now, suddenly, but gradually. It wasn't like in Volcano where it's in less than a day.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what she's referring to there. And also, the movie is largely, or the volcano eruption and lava flow scenes in the movie are largely done with miniatures.
Yeah.
And they created an 80% full-size replica of Wilshire Boulevard, which is the street that the lava flows down. And it's one of the largest sets ever constructed in the United States, and was assembled in Torrance, California. So that was fun.
Yeah.
For Dante's Peak, first of all of the crater scenes are shot at Mount St. Helens,
mm-hmm.
which I mentioned during the movie when we were watching it, because I thought it was very funny that they keep referencing Mount St. Helens as another volcano, and it's like, but you're clearly on it right now.
Yeah,
that is it.
Yeah, it looks very composited in, because it's just like small town, hills, giant volcano.
Yeah, they filmed largely in a small town in Idaho and then just like put in Mount St. Helens behind it. The director, Roger Donaldson, who I saw being credited as he is from New Zealand. He's from Australia, but he's lived in New Zealand since his 20s and has been a citizen since then. So he's a long-time New Zealand citizen since the mid-1960s. Mm. But he said, oh, he said in the DVD commentary that the camera that Pierce Brosnan uses when he's, you know, the little point-and-shoot camera he uses when he's investigating is just Pierce Brosnan's own camera. He just brought his camera to set. The dogs that played Ruffy, the dog in the movie, were wolf hybrids. So part wolf, part Airedale Terrier.
That's fun.
Which I thought was interesting. The scene where they escape the cabin because the lava starts to destroy the cabin and they jump onto the boat, which is where they discover the lake is acidic and Grandma burns her legs.
Mm-hmm.
The first time they filmed it, the boat sank. and the little girl Jamie Renee Smith, who plays the daughter in it, couldn't swim, so Pierce Brosnan had to hold her up until the crew member could pull her from the water. So that's nice. Why I've taken something down that was like really long. Oh, it's the so the grandmother Ruth refusing to leave was actually inspired by real events as well. So it was when Mount St. Helens was going to erupt in 1980, there was a resident, Harry Orr Truman, not to be confused with Harry S. Truman, the American president, who lived in a tourist lodge that he owned for 50 years, and he refused to leave. He was interviewed on camera when the evacuation was happening, and it was pointedly warned, but he kept insisting that the danger was being exaggerated. And then also a scientist, David Johnson, who was on the USGS team, had taken a position about 6 miles away from him to observe the mountain's north face. And he radioed through a message to say that it was... what he said was, "Vancouver, Vancouver, this is it." Mm. And then seconds later, he was killed by the lateral blast of the volcano, which removed the entire north side of the mountain.
Wow.
They found remnants of his trailer... 13 years later, they found remnants of his trailer.
Yeah.
But neither his body nor the body of Harry Truman were ever found. The pyroclastic flow from Mount St. Helens at that time accelerated to 675 miles per hour. Never mind.
Wow.
Kilometers an hour. Which is almost the same speed as the speed of sound.
Mm.
When the two of them would have been hit, it would have been at 360 miles per hour. This I just thought was funny because it all, and also ties into what I just said about volcano, which is that the one lane bridge leading out of the town, in the scene where you can see lots of people panicking and evacuating, it's clearly wide enough to fit two cars side by side.
Yeah.
And then when the volcanologists are fleeing later, it's barely wide enough for one vehicle.
Yeah.
It's because that shot was done with a miniature of the bridge and model vehicles. But then right at the end of it, when Paul's van gets stuck on the edge of the bridge and he ends up being washed away, it's suddenly wide enough again for two vehicles.
That's fun.
I just thought it was very funny that it was like this little miniature. And they did it a slightly wrong scale, I guess. Sweet. Budget and box office-wise, kind of similar, but Dante's Peak is definitely more successful.
Yeah, yeah.
Largely because it came out first. They were both kind of racing to get to the box office first, and Dante's Peak got there, and it was released first. Budget for Dante's Peak was $116 million. Budget for Volcano was $90 million. Volcano made $122.8 million at box office, and Dante's Peak made $178 million. So it cost about $25 million more to make, and it made about $55 million more. Mm. The other thing is that in terms of rating, so Dante's Peak is higher rated on IMDb. And higher rated amongst the general public.
Yeah.
Volcano was better reviewed by critics.
Yeah, yeah.
And has a higher rating by critics on Rotten Tomatoes. So, but I do think, I feel like they're kind of a similar level.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think I like Volcano better.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think they're pretty similar. I think they're like quality wise.
Yeah, but which one would you watch again? Over there, you're in a cabin. You're by yourself. You're bored. You've got no Wi-Fi.
I'd watch either movies. Of them. To be honest, I'd watch either of them.
You've got only enough time to watch one movie before you have to go to bed, and the only two DVDs in the Airbnb: Dante's Peak and Volcano. Which one are you watching?
I think probably Volcano.
Okay.
But I think that's because the kind of people that I described. Tommy Lee Jones and Anne Hesh's characters being are the kind of people that we are.
Yeah.
I think we absolutely would be like, give me the job, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's...
To the point where I did it recently. I just...
Oh, yeah, and when we were in a disaster situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Italy.
Yeah.
We went to ask... we went to ask the guys running the place, like, hey... what's happening, and then saw that they were really struggling at crowd control, and then we were like, oh, you need these people to stop coming through here? Okay, well, let's stop the people.
Yeah.
And Nick just, like, turned into, as it, like, to the point that other people assumed he worked there.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's absolutely, I just think that that's the kind of people we are.
Yeah.
So I feel like for us as people with integrity and... who are passionate about helping people and about like maintaining order to some extent. We've both previously worked in security, which I don't know if we've mentioned that on the podcast before. I think we would absolutely, I think that Volcano is a true movie to us.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Just to clarify and make that make sense to people, there was private security. It wasn't like standing in a mall or a train station. This was for a certain organization within premises of their property, not like, you know, Paul Blart Mall Cop. Paul Blart Mall Cop. There we go.
Yeah. A future episode, potentially. Yeah.
Potentially.
Yeah. So I think... Yeah, I think we just will identify more with the characters in Volcano.
Thank you for enjoying this episode.
If you did enjoy it,
no, that's what they did. Otherwise, they wouldn't be here. And like how
at
many
the
minutes?
Very end? Yeah, true.
It is very difficult these days to pay for advertising. So if you could please now share the episode with somebody, just either on your social media or someone in particular, possibly someone who watched these movies with you, or your parents who didn't let you watch these movies, something along those lines. Someone, you know, someone like that. Maybe you met somebody in a disaster once and became friends. Share this episode with them. Thank you for listening. Well, I appreciate every single one of you.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.